This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Terror State Targets Lynn Stewart, Part 2, A Modern Inquisition. Mark your calendar. Monday, October 16th, 10 a.m. Be at the Federal Courthouse, Manhattan, New York City. The Bill of Rights is on the line. On October 16th at 10 a.m. at the Federal Courthouse, Judge John Codal will pronounce the sentence on Attorney Lynn Stewart. The U.S. Government Department of Justice, in a 100-page report issued August 25th, 2006, recommends a 30-year prison sentence for this civil rights attorney. This criminal defense attorney with more than 30 years as a defender of the oppressed, Lynn Stewart. The probation department was also explicit in urging a 30-year sentence. The probation department stated that imposing a 30-year sentence on Lynn Stewart would be a deterrent, quote, a deterrent to all attorneys who violate the unjust prison Bureau of Prison regulations, the Special Administrative Measures, or SAMs. In Lynn's case, the violation consisted of releasing a notification to Reuters, the international press agency, of a statement made by her client, Omar Abdulrahman, the blind sheikh, who was given a life sentence for a false conviction in the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center and the supposed later attempt to bomb landmarks in New York City, the Holland Tunnel, the Lincoln Tunnel, and other landmarks. This was a false conviction, as exposed by Ralph in his seminal article, Who Bombed the World Trade Center 1993? Growing Evidence Points to the Role of an FBI Operative. Today on Taking Aim, we discuss the attack on the Bill of Rights as expressed by the conviction of Lynn Stewart and the impending sentence. Ralph.
Maya, the extraordinary six-month trial of Lynn Stewart, accused of a terrorist conspiracy based upon her representation of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, was characterized by the government's demonizing of Lynn Stewart, much in the fashion in which the falsely accused Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman and all those who are subject to these accusations by the United States authorities of being engaged in terrorist acts are indeed falsely accused. But it's interesting and important for us to understand that the association of the attorney defending the accused with the crimes of which the accused is falsely accused, falsely charged, I should say, represents a fundamental assault upon the Sixth Amendment of the Constitution and, of course, the First Amendment, the right to counsel, the right to consult with counsel in private, the inviolability of the attorney-client relationship are all targeted specifically for demolition by the Justice Department and the Attorney General John Ashcroft. The characterization of Lynn Stewart as a career criminal. This is the prosecution's designation of an attorney with a 35-year history of defending politically targeted figures on the part of the state. The state invariably picking radicals, people who are dissident, people who are opposed to governmental authority, and targeting them for frame-up prosecutions. Lynn Stewart, amongst many prominent civil rights lawyers in a long history and tradition of such advocacy, has been always there for them. But what's instructive about the way in which the authorities have now approached Lynn Stewart is to demonize Lynn Stewart herself, as the prosecution stated, as a career criminal based upon her defense of those targeted by the authorities.
And Ralph, the prosecution, the Department of Justice, contends that Lynn Stewart had, quote, egregious, flagrant abuse of her profession, abuse that amounted to material support to a terrorist group, and it deserves to be severely punished. It says that by smuggling messages into and out of prison on behalf of a known terrorist, that could have resulted in the loss of countless innocent lives. What a distortion. What a distortion of the facts, which we will discuss today, and what a distortion of the right to counsel. The basic right that each and every person has, whether you are charged, whether you are convicted, the right to just counsel and contact with the outside world. Because in effect, what the government has done is to bury Sheikh Omar Rahman alive, buried alive within prison. And what Lynn Stewart and the other members of the defense counsel, which have included Ramsey Clark, the former attorney general, and attorney Abdin Jabara, who is a past president of the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee, which had been formed by Senator James Abarizak. What these attorneys have been is the outlet to the world for Sheikh Omar Rahman, an outlet to the world that the Department of Justice wants to shut down. Ralph.
Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, the blind Egyptian cleric, let it be understood, has diabetes, has a heart condition, and is blind. He relies on Braille. He speaks only Arabic. He has been unable to communicate with anybody. Because of the advanced condition of his diabetes and his heart ailment, he has lost a tactile sensation in his fingers and therefore is no longer able to use Braille. It is in these circumstances that the government confined him to total isolation and sensory deprivation in an isolation cell in the depths of Minnesota. And when his attorneys sought to contact him, every word that they spoke to him was being spied upon under the FISA, namely the supposed entitlement to issue warrants for spying on suspected terrorists or what have you. But what's at work here with the application of these spying techniques is the total destruction of the attorney-client privilege and relationship. How do you conduct a defense, as so many have pointed out, when the government is listening to every word that you discuss? And in particular with respect to Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, he was cut off by decree from communication with family, from communication with his political movement and his supporters, from the right to articulate his ideas, his opinions, his views on his own circumstance, on the circumstance of the trial, on the issues in Egypt itself. And the device for achieving this burial alive were what are called special administration measures, or SAMs, which are in fact a total assault upon the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The SAMs preclude the right to communicate. And the lawyers themselves, who are defending the accused, the falsely accused, we will show, are themselves obligated to respect these total restrictions on the right to speak, on the right to articulate one's own interests, one's own defense, one's own understanding of the political meaning of the acts taken against one.
We cannot underestimate the significance of this attack on Lynn Stewart. We cannot underestimate it. And attorneys, judges, everyone who believes in civil liberties and the Bill of Rights understands this and has come forward to support Lynn Stewart. Over 800 letters from attorneys, from people, professionals in the criminal justice system have come forward. People who have known, people who Lynn Stewart has defended have come forward to support her. It is incumbent upon each and every one of you in the New York region to appear in the courthouse on October 16th. Your presence makes a difference. You may wonder, how did this happen? Lynn Stewart was arrested 4 years ago, April 2002, in the aftermath of the September 11th, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center, which Ralph and I have documented since the events of 2001, was a government operation, a false flag operation. It was this that was used by Attorney General John Ashcroft as the basis of attacking the criminal defense, the defense of the attack on civil liberties of each and every one of us. And Lynn Stewart was the first and foremost of the attorneys to be attacked. She was charged April 2002. The first indictment offered by the government said that she had offered material aid to a terrorist organization, that is the Islamic group in Egypt. Terrorist organizations are denoted as such by the State Department. This in itself is an abrogation of free speech, of the right for organizations to exist, for resistance organizations to exist worldwide, and for people in the United States to support the resistance of oppressed peoples throughout the world. The Islamic group, denoted as a terrorist organization, and what did the government say was the material aid that attorney Lynn Stewart had offered? They claimed that she herself was that material aid. Her very, quote, person was the material aid. The fact that she had used her telephone to contact the press was material aid. The fact that her office provided computers and filing cabinets and other avenues of communication for the blind cleric, Sheikh Abdulrahman, who the government said was himself a terrorist. This in itself was material aid. Please, let us look at what the government is doing here. Ralph.
In the prosecution's sentencing memorandum and in the prosecution's presentation to the judge with respect to the sentence that they want to be imposed on Lynn Stewart, they state the following: Congress and the Sentencing Commission have a rational basis for creating a uniform criminal history category for all terrorists. And they are specifically stating that Lynn Stewart is a terrorist, because even terrorists with no prior criminal behavior are unique among criminals in the likelihood of recidivism, the difficulty of rehabilitation, and the need for incapacitation. And indeed, they cite prior legal rulings to the effect that although a defendant has no prior criminal record, he is appropriately categorized in criminal history category 6 rather than 1, i.e. as a great danger, a candidate for recidivism, and for the necessity for incapacitation. The defendant will commit other crimes. Stewart should not receive any exceptional departure from this. Stewart smuggled messages to Abdulrahman during the July 2001 prison visit, even after her June 2000 press release caused the government to bar her from visiting or communicating with Abdulrahman. What are we discussing here, brothers and sisters? The government's designation of any communication between the lawyer and her client as barred, as evidence not merely of criminal behavior, but of collapsing the charges against the client to the charges against her representative. She is a materially aiding figure in a terrorist conspiracy on the government's reasoning, and Lynn Stewart is therefore herself a career, as to quote them, a career criminal and a person engaged in material aid to a terrorist conspiracy. And what are we talking about with respect to the specifics here? Sheikh Abdul Rahman was the leader and spokesperson for the Islamic group in Egypt, the subject of massive repression by a regime of Hosni Mubarak, noted by the United Nations, noted by Amnesty International, noted by every independent authority as a ruthless regime that disappears people and tortures them fiendishly and at will. Now, this regime in particular was rounding up and disappearing thousands of people in Egypt. And the Islamic movement, which was opposed to this regime, had come to an agreement, namely a peace agreement with the Mubarak regime, supposedly as a means of negotiating release of prisoners and alleviation of the repressive measures that the government was inflicting, not only on opposition groups, but on the citizens at large. And at a certain point in time, when under the cover of this peace agreement, the Mubarak regime was intensifying its roundup of individuals, the question arose whether the peace agreement was in fact serving as a fig leaf of legitimacy for the government's repressive operations. Sheikh Abdul Rahman was asked for his view on what is the standing and the utility of this peace agreement, and he expressed his personal opinion that the peace agreement with the Mubarak regime was essentially useless. And what was the communication that he conveyed with respect to this? The peace agreement, in my personal opinion, is of minimal utility. We should rely on the media for communicating the realities of the situation in Egypt and use the media to expose the Mubarak regime. This is the text and the statement that his attorney informed Reuters about. And this communication from his attorney on behalf of her client, who is accused of terrorism, which he denies, who is accused of conspiracy, which the evidence does not sustain, who is accused of, in fact, sanctioning attacks on random individuals and tourists, for example, the Luxor massacre in Egypt, in which 58 tourists were killed. What's instructive about the Luxor massacre is that it was imputed by the authorities to the Islamic group of Sheikh Abdul Rahman, but in fact the group itself, Islamic group, disassociated itself, disavowed this event, and it was acknowledged to have been by a ad hoc organization not connected to the Sheikh's organization, the Sheikh disavowing the event, and yet this is imputed to the Sheikh, and this indeed, on the basis of the testimony by the prosecutor and by Patrick Fitzgerald, is the crime of which Lynn Stewart is guilty, namely making known to Reuters an opinion of the Sheikh on these events, an opinion which in fact is the opposite of what the government portrays. The government maintains that this is material support for violence. It is the opposite of that. The government maintains that it is illicit under the SAMs. The SAMs are themselves measures that are imposed by the Justice Department on attorneys and on their targets, prohibiting communication. These measures are themselves violative of the First Amendment rights and of the Sixth Amendment protections of counsel with respect to clients.
Ralph, 2 points. The SAMs, the Special Administrative Measures, are imposed on the prisoners. And what the attorneys must do is sign an affidavit acknowledging that they will respect these restrictions on the prisoners. We should also note that whatever we might think, whatever anyone might think of the politics of the Islamic group and its goals of an Islamic state in Egypt, we should note that in Egypt, it is impossible for any of these Islamic groups to be political parties. And in fact, when there was a workers' party, a labor party, an Islamic labor party, it was later on banned for being too politically active. So that there is no avenue for political expression for the Islamic fundamentalist groups in Egypt. They are targeted, and at the time of the peace initiative, which is still in place, at the time of this peace initiative, the government had still gone ahead, not only with further incarcerations, but with executions of members of the Islamic fundamentalist groups. And what the sheikh had done is said it is time to reevaluate, and he left it to the leadership of the Islamic group to reevaluate the significance of their stepping back and not even in the using the press as an avenue for their criticisms of the Mubarak government. According to the government, in its sentencing position paper that it sent to Judge Kirtle, its government sentencing memorandum prepared by Michael Garcia, the U.S. attorney, it states, "The defendants ensured that even while incarcerated, Abdulrahman would be able to continue providing spiritual leadership to the Islamic group. In short, the defendants provided material support to a terrorist organization and to the commission of a terrorism crime." Although no specified crime was ever took place, nor did the government ever mention any possible crime that could have taken place as a result of the statements. What is called the press release is a telephone call made by Lynn Stewart to the Reuters news agency. Ralph.
Ralph Blumenthal in the New York Times specified on October 28th, 1993, that tapes depict the proposal to thwart the bomb used in the Trade Center blast. Law enforcement officials were fully informed that terrorists were building a bomb that was eventually used to blow up the World Trade Center. In fact, what the Blumenthal article in the New York Times on October 28, 1993, confirms is that the FBI authorities not only were aware of a plan to bomb the World Trade Center, but were in fact agents of the plan. Through an informant, an FBI operative named Imad Ali Salem. Indeed, Imad Ali Salem went into the mosque of the blind Sheikh, Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, both in Brooklyn and in New Jersey, and solicited the participation of young men in meetings where the very charges that were to level against Sheikh Abdulrahman, who was totally unaware of these provocative sting operations of the Federal Bureau of Investigation itself, where these very acts and very crimes were the acts of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And their agent, who is a high-level Egyptian intelligence operative named Imad Ali Salem, as I've mentioned, who was working for the FBI office in New York, stated that the Federal Bureau of Investigation had assured him that the bomb materials that they were supplying would not detonate. In fact, as the article by Blumenthal in the New York Times confirms, that Mr. Salem says of his supervisor, "We were going to be providing them with a phony powder in building the bomb and then grabbing the people who we had brought to the meetings." There is no ambiguity about the authorship of the events of 1993 and the bombing of the World Trade Center. And indeed, what's instructive about this, tapes depict proposal to thwart bomb used in Trade Center blast. The tapes that they're referring to are the wire transcription of the meetings that the FBI operative himself had solicited. And all the transcripts from those wires of the meetings were placed in the offices of the Federal Bureau of Investigation for a period of 6 months prior to the event. Mr. Salem, here in the New York Times, a 43-year-old Egyptian Army officer used by the government of the United States to penetrate Muslim circles was in fact the author of the plot. And indeed, the plot to, quote, destroy the United Nations, the Hudson River tunnels, and other New York City landmarks. He is the critical and crucial witness in these charges, Ralph Blumenthal reports. And indeed, not only is he the principal witness, he is the author of these proposals. After the bombing, he resumed his undercover work. In an undated transcript of a conversation from that period, he recounts his discussions about these events with his FBI supervisor. "We messed it up." How did they mess it up? The claim they make about messing it up is that the explosives detonated. Well, they're taking full authorship of these events. This is what is the entire gravamen of the charges against Sheikh Abdulrahman. And this is, in fact, the evidence that the authors of these terror acts are the United States authorities themselves. There is a particular dimension to this which has to be mentioned. One of the ways in which the Mubarak regime and the United States authorities have sought to demonize Sheikh Abdulrahman is by imputing to his organization the strategy and practice of attacking tourists, and attacking tourists not only in Egypt, but in the Arab East. Here is the Israeli publication Haaretz on November 6, 2005, with respect to the bombings of three Amman hotels. Quote, and this is the headline in Haaretz, "Israelis evacuated before attack." Indeed, the article states that the Israeli authorities, and the Mossad in particular, had full advance knowledge of the attack, evacuated its own nationals, and made no further declaration of the pending event. Here, indeed, is the Jerusalem Post, July 23, 2005, with respect to the bombing of the hotels in Sharm el-Sheikh. "Mossad behind Sharm attacks." Egyptian security experts and political analysts interviewed in Arab TV stations in the aftermath of the Sharm el-Sheikh bombing have produced evidence that Israel was behind the carnage. This is now the Jerusalem Post. The accusation that Israel is responsible for the deadly attacks were made by a group citing the evidence based upon security investigations in Egypt. The same evidence was brought against Israel with respect to the suicide attack at the Taba Hilton Hotel in October 2004, and the article details this. There is a follow-up in Al Jazeera. In other words, brothers and sisters, what we're looking at here are the hands of the FBI and the Mossad in terror events which are then imputed to their target figures. That is the underlying politics of the framing up of Lynn Stewart. That is, in fact, the political context, not only for the trumped-up charges against Sheikh Abdulrahman, but for the targeting of United States attorneys when they defend those so falsely accused, an all-out assault on the right to counsel, an all-out assault on the ability to have due process in the United States, an all-out assault upon any who dare to challenge the government's lies, to expose the frame-up charges against victims that are targeted by the United States authorities, and those who have the courage and the moral rectitude to undertake this civil liberties and necessary task, then become folded in to the false charges, and as in the case of Lynn Stewart, are called career criminals, deserving of 30 years imprisonment for representing her client. And what is the fundamental aspect of that? The spying upon every word exchanged between the lawyer and their client. How do you mobilize a defense when the government is a party to every conversation you have?
Ralph, and it goes beyond the attacks on the attorneys. The recent attacks on the press, particularly for the expose of the secret CIA prisons overseas and the torture of prisoners in secret overseas, the extreme renditions, the special renditions, and then the attacks on the newspapers for printing the exposés by their reporters. Recently, and something we will discuss in a future show, Walter Pincus, a very important article in the Washington Post, Saturday, September 2nd, describes the FBI role in the terror probe, and he questions it. Lawyers point to the fine line between sting and entrapment, and this is about the fake terror operation that took place in Miami when in May and in June, when June 23rd, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez held a press conference to announce the destruction of a terrorist cell inside the United States with potential bombing of FBI headquarters in Miami and the Sears Tower in Chicago, when in fact, as we exposed and as Walter Pincus has in great detail, this was a sting, this was an entrapment, there was no terrorist cell. This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Terror State Targets Lynn Stewart, Part 2, A Modern Inquisition. Ralph?
Well, Maya, I referred to the Jerusalem Post's headline articles establishing that the security experts and investigations in Egypt had exposed the role of the Mossad in the bombings of the Red Sea resort of Sharm el-Sheikh. That article was supplemented by an investigative report of Al Jazeera on July 25th, 2005, in which it amplified the Jerusalem Post article about the Egyptian security experts establishing the role of the Mossad. In particular, it cites statements on Egyptian television by Army General Fuad Alam, who had conducted a security investigation on behalf of the Egyptian authorities, no less, and showed that the mastermind of the Taba attack, which killed more than 34 people, were the Israeli security forces. Israel was behind this attack. They want to undermine our government and deal a severe blow to our economy. The only ones who benefit from these attacks are the Israelis and the Americans. Now, this investigative work by the general of the Egyptian army was undertaken as well by journalists throughout Egypt and indeed by the Arabic television station, which sponsored a further investigation based upon the evidence brought forward. Now, what's relevant to the situation of Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman and, of course, to Lynn Stewart herself, is that the gravamen of the charges brought against her is that she is disseminating a statement by the Sheikh that the peace agreement with the Egyptian regime had limited utility and that his movement should rely more on media. Now, that becomes folding into the falsely accused Sheikh's responsibility for terror attacks in Egypt, specifically attacks on the Luxor resort tourists.
Ralph, let's return to the case that the trial that took place in 2004-2005, the trial of Lynn Stewart, the six-month trial. It started off with the testimony of Patrick Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald, who had been one of the three prosecutors in the original trial of the 15 defendants, one of whom was the blind cleric Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, and of whom Lynn Stewart was one of the defense attorneys, along with Abdin Jabara and Ramsey Clark. And June 2004, Fitzgerald was the U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Illinois, which is Chicago, and this covered the prison of where Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman was incarcerated in Rochester, the federal medical facility there. And prior to that, he had been part of he was an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, and that is when he had been involved in the prosecution in the so-called Landmarks case. Now, what's important in this testimony, which is on at lynnstewart.org, the website of the Lynn Stewart Defense Committee, the dates are June 23rd, 2004, and June 24th. What's important in the testimony of Patrick Fitzgerald is that you see that there was no intention for this terrorism trial when Ramsey Clark, an attorney for the sheikh, himself had released in July 1997, had released a press release on behalf of the sheikh, the press release first of the sheikh's support for a peace initiative, and a few months later contacted the press about the medical condition that the sheikh was in, about the horrendous medical condition and the deterioration of his condition in with the onerous prison circumstances. Now, these were violations, and I use the word in quote violations, of the SAMs, of the Special Administrative Measures.
Maya, what you're trying to say is that Ramsey Clark's press release on behalf of the sheikh is a violation of the SAMs. In other words, the prohibition on any communication for the sheikh or, for that matter, his representatives. But Ramsey Clark, in fact, gave a press release articulating the position of Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman on the peace initiative between his organization and the Egyptian authorities.
Now, Ralph, this was twice Ramsey Clark had contacted the press. What was the reaction of Patrick Fitzgerald at the time? At the time, did he pursue criminal cases? Was Ramsey Clark considered as aiding and abetting a terrorist? What was done was an administrative measure. Patrick Fitzgerald stated, the SAMs are not restrictive enough. And he contacted Ramsey Clark, he contacted Abdin Jabara, he contacted Lynn Stewart, and said he wanted to have he wanted them to sign affidavits. He wanted to adjust the SAMs. He went to Janet Reno, who must approve of these. He went to the Department of Justice and asked for changes in these SAMs. They negotiated changes. These were signed. There was no attempt at criminal prosecution. In fact, as you see within the testimony of Patrick Fitzgerald, he had even contemplated, after he saw news reports related to Lynn Stewart's contacting of Reuters, he even attempted to get from the Department of Justice a search warrant in order to look at Lynn Stewart's phone records. And the Department of Justice refused to give this to Patrick Fitzgerald. Please note that prior to the events of 2001, Patrick Fitzgerald, the Department of Justice, were not pursuing criminal cases against these attorneys. Lynn Stewart was made as an example by the Bush administration's John Ashcroft, and consequently Alberto Gonzalez, and prior to this, Patrick Fitzgerald attempting to attack these attorneys and the ability of Sheikh Rahman to communicate with the outside world, but calling them a terrorist, destroying the rights of attorneys to deal with their clients, is an important escalation, an attack on each and every one of us. Ralph.
Let's have some clarity about what we're discussing here, brothers and sisters. The SAMs are themselves an assault upon the First Amendment and the Sixth Amendment, namely the right to counsel. What is more inalienable than the confidentiality of client and attorney communications? The prohibition, furthermore, on the attorney's right to speak for the client, to articulate the client's circumstances, to utilize the media in order to do that when the prosecution 24 hours a day is using the media to demonize and to orchestrate the charges against the victims of state oppression. When the defense, when the victim is gagged, that is effectively throttling the parties concerned, their First Amendment and their Sixth Amendment rights. And more specifically to the point, everything that Lynn Stewart did under the logic of this persecutory prosecution, everything that Lynn Stewart did was done by Ramsey Clark. Ramsey Clark is not charged in the fashion that Lynn Stewart is charged. He's a former attorney general. The political fallout calculated by the Justice Department and by the Bush regime is such that they selectively went after Lynn. Ramsey released a press release on behalf of the sheikh. They don't choose to prosecute. In fact, in the course of the trial, when it was acknowledged that Ramsey Clark had issued such a press release, the first statement by Patrick Fitzgerald as a witness in this case was to state that Ramsey Clark's press release had, in fact, been a crime. Then confronted by the obvious, if that's the case, why isn't he also being prosecuted? In their summation, they attempted to state, well, Ramsey Clark was advocating peace while Lynn Stewart was advocating violence. Now, that's interesting. The government is going to adjudicate who can advocate what and when, and to determine, therefore, who is to be charged with crime because of their advocacy, selectively, incoherently, but with a very clear intent. The attempt is to equate a courageous and radical and consistent and principled attorney with terrorism, to conflate the false charges against her client with the false charges against herself. And when they have to apply that totalitarian standard without selectivity, and they choose for political reasons not to do it, they brush over that as well. The whole thing is not just a tissue of lies, but it gives hypocrisy a bad name.
Let's look at the comments by Elaine Cassell, an attorney, practices in Virginia in the District of Columbia, and teaches law and psychology, and maintains a website on civil liberties, Civil Liberties Watch. Cassell writes on February 14, 2005, on February 10, 2005, after 13 days of deliberations, a federal jury in New York City returned a guilty verdict in the case of attorney Lynn Stewart. The jury found Stewart guilty on 5 counts of defrauding the government, conspiracy, and providing support for terrorism. And she describes the cost of how the case was conducted, of what the government did. The eavesdropping on attorney-client communications that led to this prosecution would have been unimaginable before September 11th. This eavesdropping has a serious cost in inhibiting defense attorneys' ability to zealously represent their clients. In fact, I disagree with Cassell's, because prior to September 11th, the government did have the measures under FISA to record the attorney-client communications, and Patrick Fitzgerald, in imposing the SAMs, wanted that right to do so.
Yes, Maya, but let me just make this point with respect to what Cassell's is attempting to say here. I agree with you, but bear in mind that it's only after the false flag operation of September 11th that they actually bring the charges against Lynn Stewart.
That's right. And also after September 11th, on October 31st, as Cassell's notes, Attorney General John Ashcroft secretly amended the SAM regulations without notice to the public. As amended, the regulations allow the Bureau of Prisons to conduct videotape and audiotape surveillance with respect to attorneys' communication with people in federal custody, and this is without the attorneys or the people in custody having any idea that this is taking place. As Cassell writes, the cost to us has a constitutional dimension. The Sixth Amendment's right to counsel cannot be served while the government is a third party present at attorney-client meetings. And this is incredible what she's saying. There's no exception for attorney-client privilege communications anymore. The regulations contemplate that these sacrosanct conversations will be the very ones surveilled. The regulations apply not only to convicted persons, but also to defendants awaiting trial, and even detainees against whom no charges are pending. Ralph.
Cassells is very clear. Quote, the First and Sixth Amendments to the United States Constitution have been gutted. The government is conducting an all-out assault on the right to counsel. Defense attorneys who represent alleged terrorists, even detainees suspected of having some connection to alleged terrorists, know now that the government will listen to their attorney-client communications, that this eavesdropping will give rise to evidence, quote-unquote, that will be used in their own prosecution. In their own prosecution, if they dare cross an imaginary line drawn by the government, unquote. This is the architecture of the totalitarian state. Those are the stakes in this medieval persecution of Lynn Stewart. The draconian, unimaginable sentence of 30 years imprisonment to a 67-year-old woman with cancer and with diabetes and a heart condition. Everybody understands the government's intention here. This is a death sentence. And this is designed for what? A zealous civil liberties attorney? A life history of defending the most oppressed in this society? Of thumbing her nose at the authorities when they frame up victim people, of exposing government fraudulence. That's what she's being targeted for here. And if Lynn Stewart can be sentenced to 30 years for defending a client who was framed in the first place, as with Sacco and Vanzetti, as with the Rosenberg execution, brothers and sisters, Lynn Stewart's ordeal is the Sacco and Vanzetti, the Dreyfus, the Rosenberg case of our era. It is the seminal event. It is the line that is being crossed, where nobody is safe, where everybody is targeted, where those of us who make a radio broadcast, those of us who give a speech or write an article, which challenges the government's statements or its authority with respect to trumped-up charges, will be folded in with the people, in fact, who are falsely accused by the authorities. Material aid to criminal acts and to terrorism is defined as communication, as representing a client, as making a statement to Reuters. The authorities in the United States' charges against Lynn Stewart are accusing her of a criminal history, a lifelong criminal career, of being a terrorist for providing material aid to terrorists, because as a lawyer representing her client, she made a statement to Reuters. That is the full declaration of war upon the rights of all of us, upon every formal entitlement to free speech, free association, and the right to counsel in the United States.
Ralph, in the closing statements, the closing arguments of one of the federal prosecutors in the original trial, Prosecutor Andrew Dembar, argued that Lynn Stewart and the co-defendants effectuated a virtual, quote, jailbreak, in which Rahman did not actually get sprung from prison, but did get his messages of violence out to the world. This is exactly what you were saying. There were no acts of violence. None whatsoever, and none has ever been linked to any of the letters or the statements given by the Sheikh to Reuters. And yet we have the government contending that there was a, quote, a virtual jailbreak. This is exactly what you are saying. Now, we should note that the judge has the option of a non-custodial sentence. He cannot overturn. At this point, he refused to overturn the jury verdict. That was an option before the judge. He refused to do that. Moreover, he should have suppressed the eavesdropping evidence, Cassell notes, but instead he ruled against Stewart. Now, the eavesdropping may have continued and probably continued during the communication between Lynn Stewart and her attorney, Michael Tiger. Now, this would be revealed from the National Security Administration, the recent revelations that there has been eavesdropping that the Supreme Court has ruled is illegal. And this is a case that is also a motion that is also before Judge Kirtle and will be heard in the coming days prior to the sentencing. But most of all, please, we urge you, be at the sentencing on October 16th. It makes a difference. Your presence makes a difference. Ralph.
I want again, because when Maya, we're going to come back to the framing of Lynn Stewart, but we need to, I think, emphasize here, as we have on Taking Aim from the beginning of our broadcasting, the false flag nature of these government operations and what actually underlines them. One of the pivotal aspects of the trial against Lynn Stewart was the gratuitous introduction by the prosecution of a series of videotapes and press articles about terrorism. Osama bin Laden repeatedly introduced, and not only that, but all of the various operations imputed to Osama bin Laden and to terrorism brought into this trial. They had nothing to do with Lynn Stewart's case. And yet they were brought in to incite the prejudice of the jury. But let's consider what it is that they're talking about here. One of the things that they are that the authorities one of the matters that the authorities brought into this trial with respect to evidence is terrorist plots such as the attack on the embassies in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam. Now, what's interesting about that, as I've documented so many times on Taking Aim, is that the San Francisco Chronicle established that the authors of the events, the bombing of the world of the United States Embassy in Nairobi and in Dar es Salaam, were actually those of Ali A. Mohammed, an Egyptian, get this, brothers and sisters, with an army background, who in fact was working for the Central Intelligence Agency and for the Federal Bureau of Investigation and had been even been deployed by them in the training of bodyguards for Osama bin Laden. But the press has established, the San Francisco Chronicle, that the authors of these events were U.S. operatives. The landlord for two of the accused terrorists in San Diego was an FBI operative. The landlord for those who, in fact, were supposed to be preparing the plot upon the landmarks in New York City, was an FBI operative. Indeed, every time you look with any care at these putative terrorist-organized events, including the World Trade Center bombing in 1993, the hand of U.S. intelligence is all over them. Sheikh Abdul Rahman was framed. It was an FBI operation. The press has established that. You don't have to look very far to, and you read the Los Angeles Times and the New York Times as to the events of 1993 to see the hand of U.S. intelligence. But one article in particular, I want to bring to our audience's notice right now. This is an article in the winter edition of National Interest 1995-1996 by Laurie Milroy, The World Trade Center Bomb: Who is Ramzi Youssef and Why It Matters? Laurie Milroy is with the American Enterprise Institute. She is the co-author with Judith Miller. These are people who are, in fact, with long-established ties to the Likud and to the Israeli intelligence services. Laurie Milroy.
She's the co-author of what?
She is the co-author with Judith Miller on a book on terrorism and a book with respect to Iraq and Saddam Hussein. And the relevance of that is the following. In this article in 1995, what Liwa is telling us is the following. Ramzi Youssef is involved with the stupendous bombing, the bombing conspiracy with respect to the World Trade Center, as well as a plot to blow up 11 U.S. commercial aircraft in one spectacular day of terrorist rage. She's writing this in 1995. And indeed, preparing liquid explosives to pass through airport metal detectors. You know the liquid explosives fabrication just recently in London? Here she is describing it in 1995. And what is the gravamen of this entire description of the events of the landmark case and the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993? Ramzi Youssef is an Iraqi intelligence agent, she writes. The bombing conspiracy are Saddam Hussein's revenge. In fact, she goes on, the World Trade Center bombing case is the logical continuation of Saddam Hussein and Iraq's plots against the United States. In fact, she goes on to maintain that Iraq and Saddam Hussein, she's writing this in 1995, are the authors of the events that have been imputed to Abdulrahman, the framed sheikh.
Ralph, your point being that as far back as then, there was the fabrication for the assault on Iraq, the fabrication of Iraq's involvement in every single action that the U.S. fabricated.
Well, the events of 9/11, the events of 1993, the landmark events are here laid out by Lori Milroy, and she states the following. That the attack in 1993 on the Twin Towers was intended to cause one of the Twin Towers to collapse onto the second and for both of them to collapse on their footprint, she writes in this article. 1995. 1995, you have here the surfacing of the Mossad and of the FBI and the United States authorities plot against the people of the United States, the World Trade Center. Sheikh Abdulrahman is nothing but the patsy. And Lynn Stewart is being targeted because she was defending him, because she was exposing through her defense the fabrications that the government requires to sell us 9/11, to sell us the war on terror. That's what's at stake here, brothers and sisters. Lynn Stewart is the present target. She's the litmus test of the authorities' attempts. We will go into greater detail the World Trade Center fabrication with respect to Iraq and its implications for the trial of Sheikh Abdulrahman and the targeting of Lynn Stewart. Show up, please, on October 16th, brothers and sisters. We're all targets here.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Terror State Targets Lynn Stewart, Part 2, A Modern Inquisition, was recorded Tuesday, September 19th, 2006. It will be available on our archive, www.takingaim.info. Remember, two dates, Monday, September 25th and Monday, October 16th. Please be present. The courtroom of John Kirtle, Judge John Kirtle, 500 Pearl Street, courtroom 12B, Manhattan, New York, 10 a.m.
And we shall return next week to the same subject, brothers and sisters. Stay tuned.